It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Blue Room. And the circus continues on the Blue Room as it does with Everton Football Club. As we approach, well, 4 days until Everton gets something sorted in regards to transfers. But the other bigger news that probably just about pips it today, which we're going to start with, is the new signing, the new transfer in forms of manager, and that is Sean Dyche, who's come to us as a free agent, which we expected because Everton's got no money to spend whatsoever. So we weren't really expecting anybody from a club to come and take charge of the club. But the other candidate who looked certain to arrive down in London yesterday, lads, and I'm with Rob Vera, Les Roberts and Peter Mack, as always. Every single week we get to these stages where there's a hell of a lot to talk about. But yeah, that manager that arrived down in London was Bielsa. Looked like he was sure enough going to be the next Everton manager. I personally thought, lads, that somebody like that, somebody who is from Argentina, wouldn't necessarily be making hours upon hours journey to London to talk to Everton if the job wasn't essentially going to be his. And lo and behold, we wake up in the morning and it's Sean Dyche. I'll come to you first, Les. How did you feel about this when you woke up this morning? Were you still even expecting Dyche? Because I thought it was nailed on for Bielsa at the time.
I think given the circumstances, we've dodged a bit of a bullet with Bielsa there, because I honestly don't think it would have lasted 3 weeks at the club. I think we could have found ourselves in a bit of a damned United situation whereby he turns up, he thinks, right, I'm going to do this, realise what an absolute basket case the club is, realise he's got no money to spend, we can't implement what he wants, he's got Dwight McNeil and other slow players, and I think he would have just thought, do you know what, bollocks to this, I'm out. So I think in that respect, long term, he would have been great. Had we maybe, you know, just taken that 5 week break in December to get him in and then, you know, take things from there, I think he could have been great. But I think given the current circumstances, the time he's coming in at the club as well, I just don't think it would have worked out. And it was a pretty ballsy move to turn around and say, do you know what? I'll take the under 21s for 6 months and then I'll be managers. Like, kind of need a first team manager, mate, but I mean, it's a bold strategy. But yeah, I think we've once sort of dodged a bullet, but missed the boat with them as well, just to mix up your metaphors, because I think he could have been a good thing for this club in the fact that he's such a strong character and he kind of consumes a club when he takes it over. As you saw with Leeds, they all absolutely love him, and he transformed that club from just perennial championship club into a Premier League outfit. I know he almost maybe took him down again, but that life cycle that he had with the Leeds fans, it looked like it was something special. So I think we've missed out in that regard. Just quickly on Sean Dyche, I'm quite happy with it. I'm all right with it. I think he plays into my sort of 90s 4-4-2 meat and potato football sensibilities. So I quite like the idea of that. I thought that's what we were going to get with Sam Allardyce, and I was kind of accepting of it, thinking it might be all right. So hopefully we will get some of that that sweet long ball 4-4-2 and a billowing football shirt will come back. But yeah, I'm all right with it, I think.
Yeah, Robert, I think I've sort of been twixt in between here with Dice because I've had the different things that I've said on social. I've had people coming back saying to me, oh, you know, he's going to be really good. He's the best option we've got to save us. And Bielsa, like Les rightly said, there's just going to be a box of frogs and we don't know what we're going to get. I agree with what Les said, well, which I don't want to say what you've said here, Les, but sort of if it was, it's not the right time to get somebody like him in. The thing that I've said was if it was possible to do so, if you had Dyche and he keeps us up, which essentially allows him to continue his contract anyway. But at which point I'd be looking at if Bielsa's still available then, that's the only time you go for him when he's got, you know, at least 12 weeks to work with these fellas, let's say failures for now. If he had a good 8 weeks to work, 8 to 12 weeks to work with him, then you can then look at getting him in, but not right now, given how long it'd take to get 18 games out of these people to keep them up. What are your thoughts on everything that's happened so far, Rob? And I think I'm right in saying it's a circus, isn't it?
This has probably been in some ways the most calm day of the last week. I mean,
very true.
I certainly had gotten myself a little bit excited when I saw the old man pulling into Heathrow with someone behind him pushing loads of suitcases and starting to buy into the kind of stem to stern, you know, ripping up and change of the club. I think it's interesting because so many of us have, I don't want to say we've accepted that we're going to be relegated, even though there's been a lot of that kind of vibe and narrative on online for the last couple weeks, and rightly so. I mean, when you haven't won since October, that inevitably kind of comes up. And so I think with that in mind, I thought to myself, well, instead of this constant, what I refer to as Everton is living paycheck to paycheck, where we just try to, you know, pull ourselves and crawl over that finish line to just barely stay alive and stay up in the Premier League once again. We actually are going to have someone come in and really rip things up and change the culture of this club, change the approach to something that is very defined and defiant and is certainly a unique way of approaching the game, but one that still requires a lot of that kind of full-blooded commitment and passion that we all claim to, you know, that we made our brand or whatever we want to call or whatever we claim we like about Everton football or what have you. But, and I think I was excited by the notion of that. I said that I would begrudgingly get behind Dyche, and I support him. I think there's this weird thing where there's all of these kind of revisionists out there right now who, for whatever reason, want to tell you to not believe your own eyes and to tell you that no, Dyche is really actually a great manager and his Burnley teams really aren't boring to watch and blah blah. Like, you know, don't lie to me and don't ask me to lie to myself. Yeah, I watched Burnley under Sean Dyche. I know what Burnley football looks like. I know what Sean Dyche's brand is. Sean Dyche is, unlike Sam Allardyce, is pretty comfortable with his brand. Sean Dyche doesn't really seem to push back all that much when he's accused of playing a simple, direct form of football. I think he thinks he's a pretty good manager, but he plays what he plays. And if the standard or if the bar, and I've had this thrown at me a bunch, yeah, well, what do you think you've been watching at Everton for the last couple of years? Hey, absolutely. If we can move from bad football to a more competent version of mediocre football, that's not exactly something that's going to get hearts racing, but it probably serves the purpose of getting us, you know, over the finish line of staying in the Premier League. Now, we kind of were talking about this, I don't know, a year ago, where we said Frank Lampard has one job and that's to keep us up. And if he does, then we go support him in the summer and we try to do all these things. Well, we didn't really support him in the transfer market in the summer. His limitations were certainly exposed by that. And I'm not really, I think all of this talk that, well, Dyche is such a good fit for this group of players. There is no manager that is a fit for this group of players, because we've tried every single iteration of manager, every type, what have you. The only question is can some manager come in and implement a approach and style that gets us to be just good enough to survive? And if that does not sound exciting to you or inspirational to you or what have you, I would just tell you that we have sort of forfeit the right to expect excitement or inspiration from this side right now. We have to get mediocre again before we can get average again, before we can get good again, before we can get great again. And those are that may sound tedious to you, but that's kind of where we're at. Sean Dyche is the kind of manager that a few years back, I, along with a lot of other Evertonians, would have said we are too good for him. Now we are basically Burnley of the last several, I mean, you can say all you want about big club and whatever, but we're in a relegation fight. And so now we have to go to 4-4-2 basic ass route one football for a while, and it'll either work or it won't. And if it doesn't work, he's gone. And if it does work, he might still be gone, depending on whether Mashiri sells. Because that's the other thing, by the way. Dyche is only here as long as Mashiri owns the club, and that's only if we stay up. And even then, I'm not totally sure. So, like, I'm not really preparing for some long-term Dyche era, because if anything I've learned from the last, I don't know, seven managers we've employed over the last however many years, it's that there is no new era. Anything over a season is kind of an era, I guess. But, Dyche is here to essentially fulfill Allardyce's sort of role without the baggage of someone who thinks he's better than he actually is. It is gravy tits football without the gravy tits, and that's what it is. So let's go Sean Dyche.
Come to you now, Pete. Just to one of the references that Rob was talking about is the necessity Everton have to play like a Sean Dyche side, because that's what he was always like at Burnley. To play devil's advocate a little bit with that, do you think that because it was always forced, that or seemed to be forced that way at Burnley, i.e. barely able to spend any money, he saw this as the only tactic that he could play in order for them to stay in the Premier League, and he did a successful job for that by and large, even though around a year ago he was sacked because obviously the owners felt that the direction they were going in was going to get relegated anyway, which they did eventually. But do you think there's more to Sean Dyche, and all of us are far too stubborn? I was put towards me that on Twitter yesterday, that there's football snobbery, and there absolutely is. Don't get me wrong. I certainly don't think we've hit a stage so low that we're all able to say we have a lot of snobbery about who we end up as managers. Absolutely not that condition, in my opinion. But when I've seen what Dyche does mainly, I've never looked at a game of Burnley's, not that I've watched them much anyway, for the obvious reason. And again, that's me sounding very snobbery. But watching those games that I have in the past, I've not looked at them where they've had opportunities against lesser sides in the Premier League where they've gone all out at it and, had 60, 70% possession and tried to dominate a game. I've not seen him do that at any stage. So it seems that he's very... There's a stereotype to how he is as a manager, of course, and I think he said as much of that when he was on Monday Night Football on Sky a couple of weeks ago. But do you think there's more about him than that? Can we expect to see Everton at home to, I don't know, who's bottom? We've already played Southampton at home, but let's say we've got Leeds, haven't we, in a few weeks. Could you see him playing at home against a side like Leeds and Everton looking a hell of a lot different than what Burnley did when he was their manager?
Well, first of all, Dave, before I answer your question, I've just got to say, if anyone fancies some half-price personalised Everton buckets, I've ordered 1,000 thinking Bielsa was coming in. So if anyone... I'll never be able to look at a bucket again.
I was going to say, mate, after the last time we were on, you were all set and ready to go with Bielsa. You must be absolutely devastated today.
I've been listening to what's that song, Mad World? I've been listening to it on repeat all day. Just looking at a bucket in my garden. Like, like that thing in Narcos where he's sort of looking out over an empty pool. That's been me all day. But Dyche, do you know what? I've kind of leaned towards Dyche as the week's gone on, and purely from the perspective of, I think Bielsa excited me because I thought he was a lunatic and he just suits Everton. I just think that I saw this story about Bielsa and how when the ultras at Newell's turned up outside his house to kick off because they'd lost 6-0 and Bielsa came to the door with a grenade. And said, if you don't leave now, I'm pulling the pin. And I just had visions of the lads going down to to Formby with a bed sheet and thinking, this is the wrong man. turn back.
Bed sheet quite quickly be on fire, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So, moving on to Dyche. Yeah, I do think that I think he is underestimated as a manager. I think he is sort of done a disservice by just simply saying that he's all about. Being ultra defensive and going long. I think we did see Burnley adapt, and he did bring players in, like Defoe came in and really sort of revolutionised their midfield, and they started playing some really nice stuff. And he also, up until last season, he had Dwight McNeil playing some really good stuff as well. So I think it suits us for the position we're in now. But it's really up to Dyche now to sort of see. This season, we're just going to have to accept the fact that we're going to have to be hard to beat. We're going to have to grind out results point by point. But longer term, I mean, if he were to hit the ground running and we get some good results, if he can start building up some decent results, there's no reason why he couldn't stay and why he couldn't develop the side. Like we've already touched on, Burnley never had a massive amount of money to spend. So obviously he had constraints in terms of what he could do in terms of bringing players in. But I do think he did a fantastic job with Burnley. And the fact that he was there for so long as well, you can't just carry on playing the same style and the same system over such a long period of time because it becomes stale. So that's just an indication of the fact that he hasn't just stuck to sort of one system and one style. He was able to adapt. Although it doesn't seem like the most Hollywood of appointments, I'm still quite pleased. It certainly gives me a bit of hope that we may be able to get out of this mess. As I say, I'm still dreaming of Bielsa sitting on a bucket, but maybe that day will come soon. if we can concentrate on staying up for now and see what we can do. But again, in terms of, I don't expect Dyche to come in and start sort of revolutionising anything straight away. I think he'll go back to basics, which is what we need right now. And weirdly, a lot of us have complained over the years, about certain styles of football under Roberto Martinez, although that first season, we got a massive points total and we looked and a lot of us were excited. I still do remember a lot of times where we seemed to just keep the ball for the sake of keeping the ball. Again, under Marco Silva, it happened a lot. Under Frank Lampard, it's happened a lot. Even going back to last weekend against West Ham, a lot of possession without doing anything with it. I think Dyche will be the opposite, and I think he'll try and hit the box early. And that's the type of thing that Goodison responds to be honest with you. So in a weird kind of way, it might be a match made in heaven.
Yeah, that's an appropriate point to throw your way on that, Les, in terms of, and again, I always seem to refer to this with you in the older Everton years. But when he doesn't look too happy there. He's not even smiling at me when I say that joke. He's putting his thumbs up now. What Pete's talking about there in terms of what the Everton crowds are used to is that sort of, I hate to refer to it too often, but the dogs of war type of thing. I think Sean Dyche definitely ticks those boxes, doesn't he? But also, I mean, I don't want to jump the gun here, but there's certain scenarios I think that have to be spoken about really and debated. And I mentioned it a little bit at the start where, I'd take him for 5 months if he keeps us up, then I'd go and have a look at a Bielsa or something like that. I think we have to face facts that if we do stay up, Sean Dyche is going to stay on as Everton manager. I fully expect him when it's announced at some point today, probably, that his contract is going to be 2 to 3 years, I would expect.
Two and a half years, I think, is what's been reported today.
Three and a half, was it?
Two and a half.
Obviously, at the end of the season.
I agree with you, by the way, Dave, unless the team gets sold, and then I think all bets are off.
Yeah.
If the club gets sold, all bets are off.
Well, you look at the only thing is about that, just to put an asterisk next to that, there, Rob, is if it's only going to get sold if Everton get relegated. I don't see it getting sold at any time soon if we don't get relegated. I don't see him. He wouldn't bin Everton until that stadium is completely done, paid for. I don't think he would go near selling us. But anyway, that's by the by. We'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, going back to what I was going to say to you, Robert, ask you really is, keeps us up. Does that automatically make us, given that he's not been at a club that's had relative success or mundane midfield, mid-table type of thing that Rob was referring to earlier, is there a place for him? Is that, and again, sounds very, since I mentioned that football snobbery, I've done exactly the same thing since we started, really. But when I look at that club now and see that we stay up, do you automatically look at Dice as somebody, okay, let's crack on with him as the gaffer? He gets a summer with a decent pot of money to spend. Let's see how he does getting us to mid-area in the Premier League, mid-table in the Premier League. Because to me, I've never seen him other than a manager that tries to keep a side up.
I think that's to Les.
Was he sitting there chewing his chips?
Yeah, no, you said halfway through that, you said to you, Rob.
No, because Rob jumped in to say about...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Go on, crack on.
I just want to take you back to the 90s for a change.
There we go. That's what I've got Les Roberts on for.
That's a decade that Dyche is comfortable in anyway.
Well, yeah. So,
and so am I, to be honest. So, you know.
So am I.
Something you said about the dogs of war, it's when people have been saying, like a criticism of Dyche is, why are we getting a manager that's just basically got Burnley relegated? Well, if you go back to 1993-94 season, Joe Royle got Oldham relegated.
Mm.
And we took him as manager the halfway through the season after.
So in that time, Les, would you put that as something that could compare quite accurately to the way Sean Dyche is managed?
Well, yeah, I think there are parallels. Now, I'm not saying Sean Dyche is in any way as good a manager as Joe Royle.
Yeah, I'd take a 95 World Cup off him, mate. World Cup, FA Cup.
we're not West Ham days. it's like, you know, Joe Royle, he's my all-time favourite ever manager. He's just the soundest Evertonian ever, as you know, Dave. I've interviewed him with Matt that time and stuff. But I think the parallels are there. So you look at the job Dyche has done at Burnley. It's sort of a provincial small town Lancashire club, same as Oldham. Burnley's bigger. I'll give them that. Definitely bigger club than Oldham. But they've both done a similar job in the fact that they got him into the top division, kept him there for a sustained period. I think Joe Royle got to the FA Cup semi or the FA Cup final? I think, or was it a League Cup final? I think he beat Man United in a semi-final or something anyway. But Dyche got them Burnley into Europe, which is like...
That's right, yeah. That was when they finished eighth, was it? The highest finish?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, I think the jobs are quite comparable in that way. And there are some sort of weird similarities as well with the whole sort of 92, 93, 94, 95 season with these last couple of seasons, you know, down to the 3-2 against Palace, the 3-2 against Wimbledon.
Mm.
Manager comes in halfway through the season, keeps us up, stays half of the next season, takes us right back down to the bottom again. Mike Walker did the same with Everton. So the parallels are there. You know, history never really repeats itself in that way. But I just think it's a little bit unfair to use Burnley's relegation as a stick to beat him with, because he did do a good job in keeping them in the league for that long. And it's kind of for a club like that aren't an established top flight club. It generally is a life cycle. You know, you saw it with Bolton, Charlton, Coventry had a long time in the top division, Norwich. There's always sort of some sort of cycle that if they do stay up, they will eventually probably go back down, unfortunately. I think that was just the thing that happened with Burnley. But yeah, that's as I was saying before, I think we've just got to sort of embrace it now and just be like, he might, as Pete said, he might be a really good fit for this club, because I hope he will sort of play that just in your face, long ball, fast attacking football. And not like the sort of, you know, we're not going to get 20 passes around the back and then maybe a little pass into midfield. One thing I hope he stops is this thing whereby the back four get it, pass it to the midfield, midfield pass it back,
yeah,
pass it out wide, and it's just that on repeat until we get near the box. I'm hoping he'll come up with something different like that, and there's no reason to suggest that he won't. Yeah, I think that's why I'm kind of looking forward to the change, because he is someone that could fit for the Everton crowd. You know, so long as he sort of starts on the front foot and kind of, you know, has, right, this is my style, this is how we're going to play, very in the face of the opposition. And I think Arsenal is a good game potentially to go into that, to sort of kick it off. I know they are a different team this season to what they have been in the last few seasons, but they do quite often shit the bed at Goodison. So it could be a good one. They'll be looking at this fixture and have a lot more trepidation than they would have done 2 weeks ago, I think. They'll go into it with loads of confidence, but I think there will be that nagging doubt that Goodison isn't a good place for them. And now we could have a manager who might be able to get the crowd up with the way the team plays if they do play like that.
Yeah, and Dave, can I add something? I know how I sound about Dice. Like, I am behind him, and I think that if the goal is to just, and I get it, by the way, because of the stadium, because everything that's on the line, you can't blame the club for ultimately saying, as much as you can have this sort of fanciful dream about Bielsa coming in and just kind of, you know, you appointing some caretaker manager while he takes the under 21s and then instills his DNA in this thing and then just takes over. I understand that really at the end of the day, they may have had 10 hours of discussions, but the only sentiment that ultimately mattered at the end of that was, we cannot accept any scenario where we fall out of the league. Now, granted, they may still fall out of the league, but I think that there's so much on the line in terms of staying in the league. Now, what I will say too, and we'll get on to talk about this as we talk about Anthony Gordon, I suppose, because of what the corresponding moves become, but this squad is currently constructed, is going to get relegated. So these next few days are going to be absolutely critical, given that we are at January 27th and we have signed absolutely no one. And even a world-class manager would have a hard time taking this group of players, I think, and surviving because of that pesky fact that is hard to get around, that we don't score goals. And you telling me that Sean Dyche is my manager doesn't exactly fill me with all this goal scoring confidence just by his presence alone, because, and I hate to break this news to a lot of people, but, people throwing around words like hard work and graft and playing for the badge, and these are all just euphemisms for whatever. But the bottom line is that those are not strategies. Okay. Those are just things you say about what you expect in a minimum sense out of your side going out there playing at Goodison. And of course we all expect those things, but you know, working hard is not a strategy. Just saying, hey, he's going to set us up to defend doesn't mean that we actually have the players. I'm very curious as to where all this confidence in our ability to magically become this great defensive team under Dyche comes from, because it certainly isn't coming from the personnel. I understand that everyone wanted to, you know, at least for a while, like, you know, party hardy with this notion that James Tarkowski and Connor Cody were going to come in here and be everyone's dad and hashtag leadership this thing into becoming this really stout defensive side. And that never happened. Okay. The bottom line is that we have a real talent gap here. And until you address how poor of a scoring and even not just a scoring side we are, but we don't even threaten to score. And when you don't even threaten to score, that compromises your midfield, which then compromises your back line. Like it's all, you know, that's the great and terrible thing about football, is that it is a very symbiotic sport at all levels of the pitch. And if one is really deficient, it has horrible impacts on the other. So my bottom line here is that if we can get in a few players at a few positions, but namely, I don't care what position they're at, is some form of goal scoring has got to come into this thing, then I absolutely back Dyche, who has seen everything in the Premier League, to have potentially a good enough impact to get us to safety. Mm-hmm. And right, that right there is enough for me. But he by himself, without improvements to the squad, and frankly, even if we were bringing in Pep Guardiola, I don't think that this side is currently constructed is going to avoid the drop without some significant substantial improvement of some kind in terms of talent.
I you know, it's funny you finished what you're saying there, Rob, because that's something that has been right across exactly what I've said in the last fortnight, well, a lot longer, obviously, since the transfer window opened, since New Year started. But the fact that we're just a few days away before we've signed anybody, and that's an if we've signed anybody. And of course, the Gordon thing fits into this, which we'll get onto in a sec. But over to you now, Peter. I think you've said this yourself in all the work that we've done in the last few weeks about, similar to what Rob did there, about I personally didn't think, or don't think still, that we'll stay up. And I hate to be the stereotypical Dave Downey who always has a moan about Everton and doesn't think they're good enough to do anything. But I don't look at that squad we have with any manager that we'd stay in the Premier League. I couldn't say that. Well, to be a little bit more optimistic, I couldn't say that with any confidence. And that means that you've got a manager that comes in, needs to get a tick out of players that have been complete letdowns, say 90% of them. I don't see how he gets that tick out of them, first and foremost, and that's not due to his history and my doubts I have as a manager at Burnley, and if he's able to do anything different with the squad that we've got. It's just simply the list of players that we've got, full stop, that thinks that Everton are still in massive danger, and I'd be surprised if we stay up at this stage. Therefore, what have we got? 4 days to try and sort something out player-wise. I mean, it's a ridiculous scenario to be in anyway for any club that needs players. One that's in 19th place that's still yet to do anything without a manager is just crazy as it is. Do you look at the next 4 days as a players, things that have been rumoured? I've just seen one there on Sky Sports that he's linked with the striker at Coventry, that Dyche really likes him. Even though people can say that, and we can all sit here and say about players we should go for, that we were linked with the young lad, 22-year-old at Sheffield United up front as well, to get those over the line and get them done whilst we are still yet to receive the 45 million or 40 million from Anthony Gordon. I couldn't see us getting more than maybe one, two players, which is still immensely short of what we need, Pete.
Yeah, I think we were all aware, fully aware in the summer. We've covered this before about the fact that as soon as you sell Richarlison, we should have had a replacement through the door. We've never really replaced them. We obviously had the World Cup break as well, which I would have thought would have given our recruitment team time to get signings over the line for the 1st of January. And now we're 4 days away from the end of the window and we still haven't signed anyone. Obviously, Dan Juma was a unique scenario. I can't really blame the lad for, by the way, to be honest with you. I mean, what sort of mindset would you have to be in to come into a club that's in absolute turmoil with no manager? You can't really blame him. I blame the
club more for that, by the way, because that deal could have been done and dozen. Yeah. The amount of times we heard that this lad had signed up and he'd done all of his media work and there were pictures and videos of him in an Everton top skipping around Finch Farm. if that sort of stuff is true and he still wasn't signed up, that as much as on the club as him not wanting to be at Everton, which is perfectly understandable anyway.
I mean, that was just bizarre, wasn't it? Who does the media for a player before they've actually signed a contract? It's ridiculous. But again, it's indicative of the state the club is in right now. But, you know, having said that, I mean, we do need to get signings over, you know, we need to get signings done very quickly now. And hopefully with the manager in place, things can move on quickly, hopefully. Hoping against hope that we've already got some kind of deals lined up. One thing I would say, though, about Dyche is that, you know, we do talk about players who've played under all these different managers. Well, there are a few players in that squad who've actually already played under Dyche. Obviously, you've got, you know, Dwight McNeil, James Tarkowski, even Michael Keane. He might be coming back into the fold now, you never know. But, you know, that kind of...
Please no, please
I know,
no.
I know.
Hey, come on, lads. That finish against Palace, he finessed that in, didn't he? Come on.
Yeah, throw him up front. Maybe that's what we've been missing. Maybe.
But the funny thing about that, though, the funny thing about that is he got Burnley 30 million for that lad.
Yeah.
So exactly. Dice got that, didn't he? So there's a big irony there.
But another thing I'd say as well is that, you know, we, like Rob's rightly said, if scoring goals is the most difficult part of football, but it's the most crucial part of football. And if you look through our squad, you probably would say that Dominic Calvert-Lewin is the player that we would like to rely on the most for goals. Obviously, he hasn't done it this season, but I don't think the system we've been playing has suited him whatsoever because he's been so isolated and because it's taken us so long to get the ball in the box. Remember Carlo Ancelotti said about Calvert-Lewin in that season where, you know, he broke 20 goals in the season. Carlo Ancelotti basically told him to go straight back to basics and said to him, just get in the box, we'll get the ball to you. First time finishes, we'll hit the box early. And that's how Ancelotti got the best out of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I actually think that in terms of the way that Dyche will want to play, and he does that, he does like to hit the box early. He likes to have, you know, he likes to get like a lot of crosses into the box. He likes to go a bit more direct. We might actually find that it suits Dominic Calvert-Lewin, like better than the system that's been, you know, implemented over the last couple of seasons. So I'm hoping that's my big hope, that Dyche can get a tune out of him, and if he can get other players around him firing, and add some more creativity, certainly from wide areas. I think, as I say, I do think we've got a chance. I think a week ago, Dave, I was totally and utterly, you know, I'd accepted that we were going down. I just accepted
that's with Lampard in charge.
Yeah. And as much as I really wanted it to work for Lampard, I really did. I really liked the guy. We were only going one way. I think with Dyche, he does just give us that glimmer of hope. And again, it's just the fact that so many teams around us are so poor. And we have, and those teams seem to have had decent runs that have sort of pulled them away a little bit. But inevitably, you know, their deficiencies will shine through, and you can see them dropping down again. Whereas we haven't really had a sustained run of good results. I just think that it would only take two or three wins. I know, say only, we've only won three all season, but it would only take two or three and you really start climbing the table. So I do think we've got to be patient. We've got to get the crowd on side. We've got to get behind the players, and hopefully we can get some new signings over the door, you know, through the door now that the new manager's come in.
Yeah, and that moves us on quite nicely to the sale of Anthony Gordon here, which it says it's between 40 to 45 million, maybe 40 million straight up and then 5 million in add-ons and however that comes about. But I look at this now, which is something that probably should have been done a few weeks ago. Maybe it cuts out that we do get a bit of luck here, Rob, because and both you, Rob, and Les there, in regards to that, now's the time when you get this money where the manager that we were getting rid of may have spent it a little bit early in the month. And then you've got a scenario where Dyche turns up. He doesn't like any of the players that we've signed in January, and it's become as a complete waste. Nonetheless, Anthony Gordon gone. Yeah. Think all of us will come to you first, Les. I think all of us are sort of really content that that's happening, regardless of firstly thinking that we've only got a few days to spend it and we might not be able to spend it all given the financial situation that we're in.
Yeah, the timing isn't great in so much as there's not much left of the transfer window. But as you said, the timing might be spot on in the fact that Lampard didn't get the money to spend.
Yeah.
What we did with Benitez last January. So I think, you know, to get 45 million, people will point to, well, we could have got 60 million in the summer. Maybe we could have done. I don't know how true all that was. But I think to get 45 million for a player who's played, what, a full season? Over two seasons, he's only played about a full season now, hasn't he, for us. I think it's good business because he's not really set the world alight, has he? And I think he's shown in the last couple of days, if the stories are true, that he just didn't turn up for 2 days training. He had a scheduled day off for one, but he just didn't turn back up for the others.
He came in today, didn't he? But now it looks like just to pick up his bags.
Yeah, so it kind of does show, you know, a little bit of a character flaw that we don't really need now. A lot of people are already pointing to the fact that we drive these young players out the club and we ruin these young players. Anthony Gordon has had no stick at all. Players who've had stick, Leon Osman used to get stick. He used to get real shit. Tom Davis has got some stick as well. There's players who've had stick and Anthony Gordon isn't one of them. I think the way we ruined them, Pete, you would have been there, I think, down at Chelsea last season when we all he had a good game. I think he set up the win, the equaliser, didn't he? And yeah. we all sang his name at the end, and he walked down towards the crowd and he looked absolutely buzzing. He was like, this is amazing. I want more of this. And then went away over the summer, started to believe his own hype, and he came back a completely different player. So if we ruined him, it's from building him up a little bit. At that point, it's not from giving him stick, but I just don't think he's £45 million worth of player. And I'll pass over to you now, Rob, because you mentioned it before about this English player premium.
Yeah, well, look, Anthony Gordon, I said this in our chat earlier, this sale, which, by the way, Dave, if I'm going to squint and find some, the sale is a great thing, unequivocally, but if I'm going to squint and find some good news as it relates to our potential transfer dealings in the next few days, it's that, according to David Orenstein of The Athletic, we are getting a single £40 million payment up front for this, which sounds... like, you would think that they were buying Erling Haaland from Germany, which I actually think he costs less than this. And it's just, it astounds me that a player can accomplish so little in such a short period of time and be worth this much money. And it is a testament, as I think, Les, you're referring to, I called it the English industrial hype complex of football, which is just that if Anthony Gordon was, let's be honest, guys, if Anthony Gordon had that same production and these same diva issues and all of this other stuff, God forbid if he was black, people would be, referring to him like, I mean, they'd be talking about him like they talk about Moise Keane and others. And then it would be, gosh, who's going to give us anything for this guy? But Anthony Gordon just has somehow, and this is the part that is most shocking to me. Mark and I did an episode of Kickabout before the end of the summer transfer window that was an hour devoted to why they had to sell Anthony Gordon now. Mm. And back then I was saying that Anthony Gordon had actually become one of my favorite Everton players over the course of the previous season, from the standpoint that he's homegrown, he is going to give you everything he's got, he's someone who loves the club, blah 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 blah, all those things. But we are not one player away. We are not in a financial position where we can really refuse that money, so you take the money, you wish him the best, and you let him go. And we warned that if you didn't sell him, there was a chance he was going to pout and not play nearly as well as he did before the window closed. And what happened? Exactly that happened. And forgive me, Dave, I'm wrong so much. I'm wrong, like all of us, so often about Everton that I'm glad I'm going to point out that I was right about this. And Anthony Gordon, the fact that we are still getting this kind of premium for him after... not only, it's not even just that he was poor in terms of his goal return. I mean, the narrative will be that the Everton fans ruined him or something like that. No, he not only stopped scoring, he stopped starting games. He stopped being reliably available. When he was on the pitch, he looked absolutely worn out after about 45, 50 minutes. His fitness was not the same. I was at the match at Goodison against West Ham, one of those rare things called a win, which was really fun, by the way. And I'm welcome to I'd love to come back and be crowd.
That was Mope's only goal as well, wasn't it, Rob?
Yeah, Mope's only goal. But I remember in that game, Anthony Gordon just basically loafing back. And I think it was he and Nathan Patterson got into a shouting match. Because Patterson was giving him stick for not covering defensively. And then you had to have Alex Iwobi come in and break it up. Anthony Gordon, in one summer, I've never seen a heel turn like this outside of, Hulk Hogan joining what did he join?
The NWO.
The NWO. Yes. Like, it was the heel turn of all heel turns. You had literally had this amazing story of the young kid from the academy who had finally made good and was so happy to be there. And then the second he showed up in those, in again, I'm all for pro athletes and their fashion, but generally speaking, I would advise that, hey, try to, if you're going to be audacious, it's a lot easier to be audacious when you've actually done anything. But it was when he showed up with the blonde hair and the Harry Styles starter kit clothes. And I thought to myself, This is a guy who has committed the cardinal sin that a lot of young athletes do. And that is someone who becomes truly enamored with the smell of his own farts. He is a guy that really believed in all of the hype from everyone telling him how good he was without actually accomplishing any of the things that he was told he could possibly accomplish. And Newcastle have bought into this. And I'm shocked and I'm pleasantly surprised by this, but I'm glad he's gone because, yes, we need the money. Yes, we need to get players in. Does he have some talent? Sure. Is he going to be a superstar? There's absolutely no evidence. If he becomes one, that'll be no one. Anyone who says they could have predicted that is lying to themselves and lying to you. He is an okay player with some unrealized talent who was a dressing room cancer. And I don't even say that lightly, by the way. He is someone who thought he was bigger than the team. And for him to profess this love of his idol, Leighton Baines, and then to have the balls to not even show up for training in the ultimate sign of disrespect to an absolute club icon that he professed to respect and a club that he professed to love, to me says everything you need to know about Anthony Gordon. And good riddance. I don't care why they paid us $40 million. I'm glad he's gone. And hopefully we can, you know, spend the money somewhat wisely. I mean, who knows? Knowing us, we probably won't. But sometimes there is addition by subtraction. And I'm glad to see the back of Anthony Gordon.
Well, yeah, I mean, Pete, I echoed what Rob just said there at the end. But also, like, I don't feel there's even one glimpse of regret that we have with him, given the comparison to perhaps Ross Barkley when he ended up going, who, like, the instant hatred was there, wasn't it? But I go as far as saying this is beyond what we all felt towards Barkley initially when he left and kept that contract until Chelsea came in and got him on the cheap. Having 6 months previous, it looked like he was going to go to Spurs or them and actually sell some decent money. Should even look at Gordon and think, do you know what? I don't care if the fact he's got us 40-odd million into the bank, regardless of how we spend it. But the fact we just need rid of somebody who looked to become a really, really, you know, sore tooth in this squad, it to me looks like there were issues that went a little bit beyond just simply getting rid of this lad because he doesn't want to play for us.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in terms of the comparison to Ross Barkley was twice the player Anthony Gordon is at his age. Ross Barkley was absolutely miles ahead of him.
Ross Barkley fan, Peter, but you're absolutely right.
No, but that's it, though. It's a stark reality, is that Anthony Gordon seems to, he's a legend in his own mind. He's the type of person or player, like you say, we always get told that we don't back players and that we sort of get on the backs of young players, like Les said earlier. Well, this is what happens when we actually do support them. So, you know, we've done nothing but try and build this lad up and try and back him. And we've probably turned a blind eye to the fact that he just isn't that good, to be perfectly blunt. The one thing he does or he did have, which made him probably have a lot of sympathy with Evertonians, was the fact that he was a hard worker, that he seems to battle, that he seems to fight, that he seems to have the will to improve. Well, he doesn't have that anymore. he seems to, for whatever reason, I don't know what's happened to him over the summer. Maybe when he got the highlights put in his hair, something went wrong. I don't know, but something's changed with him. And you can see it in his play, like Rob said, you know, about when he was arguing with Nathan Patterson. The fact that he gave away that ridiculous free kick against Southampton the other week, which was just petulant. It was just a stupid, of all the positions to give away a free kick with James Ward-Prowse on the pitch. If James Ward-Prowse could have picked that ball up and put it anywhere on the pitch, it would have been where Gordon fouled him. And it's just nonsense. So I am personally delighted to see the back of him. I think he would, I can't, unless he gets that hunger back and that desire to prove himself, I don't think he'll be anywhere near a top-class player. I just think attitude is so important with footballers and certainly with young players. He's probably knocked himself back a whole year of his development purely through having a terrible, terrible attitude. So good riddance to him. Newcastle are welcome to him. if anyone from Newcastle is listening, by the way, and they haven't quite got the deal over the line, he's fantastic. You'll love him. Just give us the money so you can clip that bit and put that out. But other than that, yeah, he's at 40 million pounds for Anthony Gordon. I reckon I could probably get 10 for me if he's worth 40 million.
But of course, the elephant in the room that comes along with this, and sort of this is towards the head toward the end of the pod, is how you're going to spend it. I mean, it's like any transfer you let go. We did so with Barkley, the horrendous ways in which we've spent money under Farhad Moshiri since he gave us them ridiculous amounts financially. This, and we've said it a lot of times in the last, 6 years, 7 years that Moshiri's been here, this is going to be the most important summer. This is going to be the most important transfer window. We seem to bang on about it every single year. If there was ever one that was actually true to be the most important, it's essentially the next 4 days. I think if it's going to keep Everton in the Premier League, or we indeed get relegated, as a few of us predict. Les, I don't want to put you three guys on the spot in regards to the particular names that we'd be looking for now, but positionally, I guess, unless you've got any names to throw into the hat, do you look at this and think it's just simply a striker here? That's all we need. If there's one signing that we're able to get over the line before the end of this month, it simply just has to be a striker. Or do you look beyond the rest of the squad thinking, do you know what, that is so bad, we need an individual there as well if this is going to give us the best chance to stay in the Premier League?
I think it depends on how he's going to play. I think if he's going to play 4-4-2, then another striker.
He played that a lot, hasn't he?
Yeah, but I think if he plays that, we've got wide players he can use. We've got probably two midfielders that could do the job out of the four, say, midfielders we've got. But if he's going to play anything different where it requires a creative midfielder, let's say, so he plays 4-3-3, you need one of those midfielders to be creative, or a 4-2-3-1 or something like that, then I think we're going to need another midfielder as well. I saw Alan Stubb saying before, we need a left-back, and a probably wouldn't argue with that, to be honest.
Alan Stubbs thinks we need five players, Les. You know what? The idea of us signing five players in 4 days just feels completely ludicrous.
But also a left back, that sort of thing's further down the list, isn't it? We essentially need.
It's not a priority, but I do see the point, to be honest.
Do Dyche's sides have fullbacks that actually cross the ball? I'm being very sincere here because I feel like I can count on two hands the number of times I saw Mikolenko and Patterson cross the ball into the box this season. I've never seen just a complete abdication of any offensive role of the fullbacks like I saw under Lampard.
Yeah.
And so I'd love to see that come back in, because I thought Patterson especially was going to be someone who could really be an offensive threat.
Yeah,
I was saying this morning. Oh, sorry, Les.
I'll give anything for an overlapping run from Mikolenko.
Yeah, spot on. Yeah. One of the things I was laughing at this morning, and I had a good joke with it myself, is, you know, you'll have McNeil and Tarkovsky turning up in three-piece suits today to welcome, and Keane, of course, as well. The one other thing I was thinking was that Neil Mopey's probably looking at this thinking, I can restart this Everton career here because I'm the type of snide that Dyche likes. I mean, you can't look at that. I can't look at that 11 and think, you know what, you want to play a 4-4-2. I think we sort of looked at it a little bit when he first came in, Mopey, for that ridiculous fee of 15 million. And thought, oh yeah, you'll comfortably be seeing him back in next to Calvert-Lewin, Little and Large, that traditional two up front that you want. You can't, I mean, I know Dyche is renowned for being somebody who'll throw mixers into the pot, he'll throw players in who can fight for the club and put, you know, all that sort of thing that a lot of fans are going to like, that we referred to, dogs of war stuff. Did you put Neil Mopey in that? No one can answer this, can they?
Here's what I want to know.
That's how bad he is.
I don't know. I mean, I'm up for any solution that involves goal scoring, I suppose. I don't.
So not Neil
I mean,
Mopey,
I think then. Mopey's got the attitude, but do his physical traits really match what you're looking for? Now, here's the other thing. I think there's this, like, assumption that, like, well, we just need to get someone to pair with Calvert-Lewin as if Calvert-Lewin is going to be just fine. Like, we take that for granted. Like,
exactly.
I mean, I don't know, you know, Les mentioned a striker, and I think we'll almost certainly be targeting a strike, but I think sometimes the word striker and forward become this kind of synonymous mesh of, like, I don't really care personally. I am for addressing any position that will add goals. That means into the midfield. If they can add some creativity, great too. I mean, again, I don't know what you find in 4 days, you know, but I think that when you have this much money suddenly burning a hole in your pocket, then maybe there are going to be actually more options than you think. But I my head is spinning at the notion of having 4 days to try to fill this many holes. And I am very curious to see, for instance, and Les, you may know this, or Dave, Peter, anyone can answer this. When Keane, I don't really care to ever see Michael Keane play at Everton again, but I do recall when Keane was playing there, was he playing in a back three, like a 3-3 center half setup with Ben Mee and I couldn't remember if he played in a back three or in a two.
I think it was a two. Was I always thought he played four at the back.
Okay, so if he's just a straight 4-4-2, then, I mean, you know, does Iwobi, I mean, again, what is Iwobi? All I know is that Iwobi, wherever we've put him, has been pretty effective overall. I mean, he's dipped a little bit lately, like the entire side has, but I would assume that Iwobi plays somewhere in that four-man midfield somewhere. I think that someone like, I mean, you'd obviously rate Onana to be part of that too. And so, you know, who are those two guys? Who are your two kind of flanking midfield players in that four? I'm real curious to hear what people's thoughts are on that. I just haven't even been able to wrap my head around how system with the current squad. And I think the reason that I have such a hard time with that, or anyone would, is because we just don't have a complete picture of what the squad is going to look like on February 1. At least that's certainly my hope.
Yeah, I think for me, that left hand side terrifyingly would probably look like Mikhailenko and McNeil.
Yeah,
which actually is making me break out in hives right now.
Well, yeah, but the point on McNeil is the manager we've got now is the one that made who he is now, as in, he's the one who's got the positive side of his career, was able to sell him for over 20 million to us. And you guys will not remember fondly when he scored an absolute worldie against us at Goodison.
I remember it.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah. And he was, whenever I watched him at Burnley, he was really a positive attacking left-sided player, which he just seems to have lost all that, similar to many different players. Well,
and let's remember this about Dwight McNeil too. What we were sold on, especially coming off of a season where he did not score goals, I believe I recall reading that he was still in the top, I want to say 10 or 5 or 10 in the Premier, no, 10 in the Premier League in chance creation.
That's
obviously kind of disappeared. And if there's a way to kind of recapture that, I don't expect McNeil to start just scoring goals for fun or anything like that. But I do think that if I'm looking at Daesh, I'd like to believe that he can take our investment in McNeil and get something more substantial out of it than what Lampard was able to, because he's familiar with the both strengths and limitations of someone like McNeil. But I don't know.
Yeah. If I was going for an 11 that he's going to start against Arsenal fitness, in that obviously Pickford, and then left back Mikhailenko will stay in. I would like to see, I don't think it'll happen, but I would like to see Cody, Tarkowski, and I play Godfrey right back, because I think Patterson's still out. I don't think Coleman's got the guile and the energy, even though he still has the age that he is. This is probably his last season, if not the one before his last season.
Does Cody still deserve to be starting? Am I allowed to ask that question?
Cody,
Tarkowski and Cody have both been pretty
bad. The pair of them were dreadful. I mean, Tarkowski was woeful against West Ham.
Woeful against West
Ham. last week. What he did trying to two-foot Antonio was just, I don't even know what he was thinking of there. Before he runs down the wing, crosses the ball. And
I think it's an open question, but I do think that every spot ought to be up for.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that outside of Pickford, I don't think that anyone should assume they have. I mean, no. At least that's what I think. Now, granted, Tarkovsky absolutely starts because he's one of Daesh's boys, but I just don't know. If you've got all your center halves healthy, I think that there's an open question about that. But to your point about Godfrey, I if he's going to go ultra defensive, then yeah, I think Godfrey maybe starting on the right side makes some sense. You could probably get him occasionally using his pace to push up a little bit, even though he's kind of a disaster with the ball.
But even then, as much as we're assuming that he's going to play 4-4-2, there'd be a lot of money. There'd be a lot of thought in his mind now, if he's already picking this in his head, that he'd go for a 5 at the back.
Maybe.
Because given that his career's been made largely on how defensively good he's got his sides, as in lots of 0-0 draws, lots of 1-0 wins.
Is he more married to his 4-4-2, or is he a pragmatist who says, I'm going to play the formation that makes the most sense based on what I've got? Because if that's the case, then I think that there's probably a better case to start 3 center halves and
team. Yeah, exactly. That's what I think we'll see a lot about who he is these days, because that has been his bread and butter, is the 4-4-2, 2 central defenders. But you look at Everton's situation, you're just desperate not to lose, plus the fact you're playing top of the league side and then Liverpool away. That'd be, in my mind, what made more sense to play 5. If he's so, first thing he gets there is first day that he's coaching the side, he's going to say, listen, this is how we're going to defend here. We only want to keep clean sheets ahead of anything else. But if he's going for, like I was saying, if you go Godfrey right back, and then I think the midfield 4 then will pick itself. I think he'd go left wing McNeil, right wing Gray, and then two in the middle, it would be Onana and Gay.
Awobi's not getting benched, surely.
Well, I'd go Awobi just behind as a 10, maybe behind Calvert-Lewin. But the other side of that is Decore would be someone that he likes, I reckon. And just that physical prowess that he's got in the midfield. I mean, I've thought he was dreadful, and it looks, to all intents and purposes, it looks like he wants to leave as well.
He's been for ages.
Yeah. Well, the one thing.
Well, I think under Lampard, he was very. I mean, there's a lot of talk that Lampard was not really good at having conversations and being transparent with his players about why they weren't playing or why they were, you know, and maybe he thinks he's getting a new start. I mean, again, let's see who they bring in. But if they bring in anyone in midfield, and then, of course, does James Garner fit into this mix at some point too?
He's back in February, at some point in February, isn't he, next fortnight or so? Just to go to you people, what do you think about what he'd go with? I mean, it's obviously it's a massive assumption given the fact that we're not going to sign any players, but I don't think many of us are confident that that's going to happen. When you wake up on Tuesday and we've got like 5 brand new players, that'd be fantastic, wouldn't it? But that's not going to happen. What are you seeing there? There's a potential 11 that he's going to have against Arsenal.
Well, I think one thing to bear in mind as well is that we're playing, you know, playing Arsenal. You can't be suicide to play 2 up front against Arsenal, just because they'll pick us apart in midfield. They'll absolutely pick us apart. I think you need the extra man, either 3 at the back or an extra man in the middle. Like you say, Decore, because he's got the legs, he might suit Daesh. And certainly coming up against that Arsenal midfield. And with the other thing I'd say as well, by the way, about Ben Godfrey, I'd be tempted to put him in at left back purely because of Bukayo Saka and because of his ability to come inside.
I thought you were just going to say because Mikhailenko's shit.
Well, that is as well.
Harsh to say, yes it is.
Yeah, he's I'm not his biggest fan. But yeah, I'd be tempted to put Godfrey on the left. It's a tough one, but I think the first 2 games, I don't think we're really going to see
many
clues as to how we're going to set up for the rest of the season. I think, like you said,
damage limitation.
It is damage limitation. It's about as defeatist as it sounds. It's about keeping the goal difference okay, going into the final 16 games. But yeah, I think we'll be set up to be hard to beat rather than being pragmatic and trying to go for any kind of win. But again, having said that, you know, you never know. You never know if you can nick one. Certainly against Arsenal at Goodison Park, for some reason I always fancy us to get something. I remember a few years ago when Ashley Williams scored a winner in the last minute and things like that. I remember, you know, Andy Johnson scoring on Mother's Day Damari Gray, another one. Yeah. So we do have a weird sort of thing against Arsenal. But I think it is just purely about keeping it as tight as possible and then hopefully trying to nick a goal from a set piece or a corner and see where we go from there. But I certainly don't expect us to be playing two up front against them, put it that way.
Well, that's to end our podcast for tonight. I think, you know, the Sean Dyche era is about to begin. Whether that's like it's in Lords of the Rings or Game of Thrones, as many people have thought that he looks like in the past, that he remains to be seen. But let's hope he's doing what Pete says there, put tight performance against Arsenal, manages to grab a point and do the exact same at Anfield the following week. I think we'd all take that, even though it's only 2 points from six. But yeah, thanks for listening, as always, across the weekend with all of this happening, with Gordon, with Dyche, and possibly some signings before we all wake up on Tuesday. Then there'll be bagfuls of podcasts across the Blue Room, as you know there always is. Free ones and across the subs. Matt Jones has done a fantastic interview with Natalie Bromley from the Burnley podcast. She had some fascinating insight into Sean Dyche and things that we might not know about it, even though we've watched them and stereotyped Burnley to death, I think, during this podcast at times. But thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back soon, as always.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.